There's a reboot framework that I use called Aloha. As we all know, Aloha means hello. I just made it really simple. I dumbed it down on purpose just to make it really easy. So there's an acronym Aloha. So A stands for acknowledge. Acknowledge where you are. Where is that disruption happening? How is it affecting your personal life, your business life? Like, just be really realistic about it. L, listen. So listen to your inner self or your intuition or even the trends that are happening. Don't ignore that information. Really optimize and really figure out for yourself, what is that actually? Harness that information, like don't be blind to it, and then act upon it. And I would say that's like a simple way to add credence to the fact that disruption happens to all of us. I mean, you mentioned two big key disruptions. Everyone's going through the AI disruption, and they're all freaked out about it. And so I would say the key element is to really focus on the balance that you have within self, because that really determines how you move forward, or how you lead, or how you organize teams.
Welcome to Time Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell. I'm Mark Dolan, and this show is about lessons that hold up under pressure, trust-based selling, leadership, discipline, and the kind of mindset that still works when life gets hard and the old playbook stops working. Today's guest is Savio P. Clemente, a keynote and TEDx speaker, resilient strategist, journalist, and executive coach. Savio's story includes what his doctors call a medical rebirth, a cancer diagnosis, relapse, and a life-saving stem cell transplant. And on the other side of that, he started asking better questions. What do you do when the old operating system no longer works, but the new one hasn't fully come online yet? He's also interviewed 2,000 plus leaders, founders, and high performers, looking for the patterns that actually last, especially when disruption hits. If you're a real estate agent, salesperson, entrepreneur, or leader, this conversation is going to help you rebuild clarity, confidence, and direction without hype and without pretending you're fine when you're not. So let's get into it. You are a two-time cancer survivor. And for the people that have never had that experience, and most people don't want to have it, and for even for those that do, what's the most important message that you learned to power through that?
Yeah, Mark, thank you so much for asking such a great question. I would say the number one thing that is really preeminent in that whole process is really listening to your body and being present in the moment. When you're getting a diagnosis, when they're doing testing, a lot of times we can disassociate, and that's the worst thing you can do. I also learned two really key attributes, which is silence and stillness in that process. And those are things most people don't talk about because they think it's like really, really simple, but they really help anchor you in the moment.
I know that a lot of people have a very, very spiritual experience when they go through, you know, those kind of life events are very humbling. Can you talk a little bit about how it impacted you personally and what you focus on?
Yeah. So just some context. I was initially diagnosed in 2014, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 3. And then unfortunately, 10 years later, June of 2024, I found out I had a relapse. And I think for me, the main thing that both experiences taught me in terms of my own spirituality. So I grew up Catholic. I was an altar boy. I went to Catholic elementary school. And then in college in the mid-90s, I knew I wanted to explore other belief systems. So I explored many belief systems, including Buddhism, the Vedanta. I've also studied, Stoicism. And so for me, I would say, when it comes to just this process in general, is that a lot of times when we're given challenges, people assume that it's a twist of bad luck. And I'm not saying that having cancer twice was a good thing, but it does teach you a lot about your own sort of inner workings of how you want to proceed with life and how you want to have your relationships flourish. It teaches you about savoring your own mortality and also things that you want to accomplish in life. But I think the key thing that it really taught me a second time was the fact that I didn't really have to struggle as hard as I did in life, that things like this happen to us. And so the progress that I made was great, but at the end of the day, it can be taken away from me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go back a little bit. You know, most of my audience hasn't, you know, has never met you before, I don't think. So can you share a little bit of your backstory, sort of, you know, the path that brought you to what you're doing with your work today?
Sure, Mark. So I'm a keynote TEDx speaker. I'm, as you mentioned, a two-time cancer survivor. I'm a journalist. I've, at this point, I think interviewed over 2,000 global leaders, including celebrities, and I'm also a best-selling author. But the main thing that I really want to establish in the world is this idea of disruption within your own life and with others. And so that's my key phrase, is what happens after disruption, when that operating system of yours does not work and it fails on you? And how can we make better decisions using what I call, you know, a category I created, which is adaptive resilience leadership, which is in the moment being flexible and being resilient in the moment as to what is happening to us, not just bouncing back, but finding ways to cultivate a new understanding or new learning from that. And so I've just made it my mission to really continue with that.
Yeah. So for people that are experiencing disruption in their business life, which happens in just about everybody's business, I mean, the real estate business is going through a lot of transition all the time. It's always changing. There's always people trying to disrupt what it is that we're doing. And that's where innovation comes in, I think, is one. And then we have personal disruption that happens as well. So what are some key mental aspects or mental toughness techniques or ideas that you can share with people when they're facing disruption in their business? What steps can they take?
Sure. So there's a, I did a TEDx talk, like I mentioned. So there's a reboot framework that I use called Aloha. As we all know, Hawaiian Aloha means hello. And so I just made it really simple, really like sort of dumb. I dumbed it down on purpose just to make it really easy. So there's an acronym Aloha. So A stands for acknowledge. So acknowledge where you are. Where is that disruption happening? How is it affecting your personal life, your business life? Like just be really realistic about it. L, listen. So listen to your inner self or your intuition or even the trends that are happening. Don't ignore that information. O is sort of really optimize and really figure out for yourself, what does that actually sort of mean? So it's like, open yourself up to that. Harness that information, like don't be blind to it, and then act upon it. And I would say that's like a simple way to mention or a simple way to add credence to the fact that disruption happens to all of us. I mean, you mentioned two big key disruptions. Everyone's going through the AI disruption and they're all freaked out about it. And so I would say the key element is to really focus on the balance that you have within self, because that really determines how you move forward or how you lead or how you organize teams.
Yeah. You mentioned AI as a disruption, and I've seen that in the people that I talk to. I've also read some studies that talk about how the productivity that is available through the use of AI is unimaginable. We don't know what it is yet. And that there is a great fear from the perception of a lot of people that it's somehow going to replace them. And so there's a great resistance. There's almost like this pullback that's going on with people where they say, you know, I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to help in my own demise, I guess, is sort of the mindset that people have with that. And, you know, my approach has always been is that if there's going to be change, rather than fight it, why wouldn't you be a part of it or ride it? And, you know, so what would your thoughts be on that for people?
Yeah, so I attended the AI summit. I covered it as a journalist in New York. It happened about like a month and a half ago. And one of the key elements there, of course, they're all proponents of AI, right? It's a summit for AI. So they're not going to be, you know, sort of have anti sort of AI initiatives there. But I would say you need to embrace what's happening in the world, because that's the only way that change, actual change, can manifest. So you don't have to use it to the point of, as they call it, AI slop, right? So if you're a writer, I'm a journalist, right? I don't want to put out content that's just AI just crafted. So I would say the number one key is to embrace it and see it not as an enemy. So I mirror this with my own medical disruption or situation. A lot of times most people will think of chemo and they'll be like, no, I don't want it. It's poison and whatnot. And I totally get it. But I reframed the chemo now twice. And I said, it's an elixir. It's a remedy. It's not a poison. And I would constantly be mindful of that, even though the side effects of it were harsh and not pleasant. So I think people need to do the same thing when it comes to AI. Understand it, set your limits with it, and also create ways where you can optimize. I mean, it really can make you more well-informed. It can also polish whether it's your writings or your content. And then lastly, it can also allow you to be more open-minded to additional information that you probably didn't even think of.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. So, you know, let's go back. You say the discipline alone can fail after major disruption. Why? And, you know, explain that a little bit. What replaces discipline?
Yeah. So I think when it comes to discipline, people often assume that it's something that's harsh, right? When you think of discipline in general, you can look at the holy text of any belief system, and it's always like they're beating you down. But discipline is really at the core of it, individuals who are not really properly listening. That's why discipline was so harsh back in the day, because they were not awake to the information. So they had to be constantly taught that discipline is something that can be added to your everyday. So I would say a couple of things. Chop it down, right? Make it sort of simple and easy, because if you don't, it's going to burn you out. And also, discipline can also be an additive, because you can work smarter, not harder. So it goes back to the adaptive resilience aspect of it. It's like, well, what's actually happening now to me and my business or my life? And how can I make incremental moves, not big shifts, because those take time. So I think discipline helps you just really have an overall bird's eye view as to where you want to go and what do you want to accomplish.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. It reminds me sort of a story I heard years ago from Zig Ziglar, where he was out exercising. He had the discipline of daily exercise. So he'd go out for a run every single day. And he was running, and he would always say good morning, even if it was in the afternoon. He'd say good morning as he'd go by, smile to people. And, you know, he just had this really great attitude. And I remember somebody, asked him the question, why are you working so hard, or why are you so disciplined? And his response was that he was getting to enjoy the process. And so the discipline wasn't a battle for him. It was actual the expression and the manifestation of what he was trying to accomplish. And I think that's sort of a little bit of the point that you're talking about. Is that right?
Yeah, it becomes almost like a habit. So it doesn't become such a hard, like the word discipline, you mention the word to anyone, they think it's dear. But if you soften the word a little bit and maybe think of it as like a habit, I think it makes it easier to swallow and also easier to follow. So, yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about trust, because when people are going through disruption and, you know, their plan's not working, and they start to distrust in themselves because what used to work before is no longer working. And a lot of times there's self-doubt and distrust in themselves. So, you know, what would you share with, you know, real estate agents, salespeople, or anyone that's going through that experience?
Well, I would say first figure out for yourself, do you trust yourself? Like, do you really trust yourself? And write it down, like outline exactly in different areas of your life if you actually trust yourself, because you are a mirror to other people. So if you have hesitancy with your own self in moving forward in any area of life, that's going to reflect very easily to other people. People can smell. I've talked to very powerful people. They can actually smell on you certain hesitancies or certain blocks that you have. And so I would say first, sort of figure that out for yourself. And then I would say just generally, if everything sort of, you know, keys out well, then figure out for yourself, well, who in my immediate circle, whether that's business or personal, that I can extend a will of gratitude with, that I can share something personal about myself, that I can allow myself to maybe form a partnership with someone. So I think self really starts trust starts with self first, and then it extends out.
Okay. So you talked, you said something there that sort of fascinated me a little bit, is that you've met people that can sense in the way that you're presenting yourself, roadblocks or things that are in the way. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I did an interview with Venus Williams. She started a wellness brand a few years ago, and she was very guarded. And after the interview, I asked the PR rep, I'm like, was it me? Did I, you know, do anything? It was a great place in Brooklyn, you know, that we had the interview. And she's like, no, that's just Venus. And so I think when you get to that kind of a level where your life is a for others, they distill what you do into a couple of words or a sentence. She's a performer, performance. She's a woman. She's African American. You know, all those labels. And I noticed that for myself, I wanted to ingratiate myself towards her, right? I wanted her to accept me. But in a way, she was at a different type of level where she kind of sensed whatever she sensed that day, or maybe she was having a bad day. I don't know. But she sensed that. And so for me, it was just a reflection. So I mentioned that point because it's very important for people to understand that when you're talking with someone, especially in levels of life or business you want to get to, there's often a point where you want to feel like people want to sort of take you in and embrace you. But what they're doing is they're really sort of figuring out what kind of person you are. And then from that, they're forming their own opinion. So I would say just be as authentic as you can.
Yeah. And that's really important, you know, particularly for salespeople when they're interacting, particularly with somebody that they don't know very well, is that the unconscious body signals and insecurities and those kinds of, they are projecting. I mean, if you haven't gotten yourself whole on the inside, if there's something that's missing, a lot of times your communication will come through to highly perceptive people. And a lot of times we're not even really aware of that. The phrase they use a lot in sales is when you're short of money, they call it commission breath. You know, basically is I have to make a sale so bad or else I'm not going to be able to eat next month, that they're projecting that need into every conversation they have with people rather than a spirit of service. So that's great.
I would say that extends even when you cold call or when you do cold pitch emails. It's the same thing. There's an air of desperation that sort of happens, right? You want to have that person respond back to you, but the key is to just put it out there and forget it. And that's what actually, I remember listening to an interview with Oprah years ago. She said that's what she used to do, you know, before she became uber famous. She just would put it out there and just literally not think about it the next day.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So, you know, you mentioned that you've interviewed 2,000 leaders. Can you tell me what sort of separates some of the leaders from other people that you've met? Are there any common traits that you've seen?
Yeah, I would say the number one, and this is not often talked about, and it's considered a little bit on the fringe, would be this idea of metacognition, which is they are very observant as to where they are. They're very sort of present. They're very focused. They know the overall arch of where they want to go. They're actual individuals that not only motivate teams, but they actually see the bigger picture of where that motivation will eventually go. But metacognition is really the ability to know where you are in the moment, but also to allow yourself to have some level of distance to reflect your actions. So in other words, they know kind of what they're talking. So like in an interview, right, they're talking with me, they're all excited, you know, but they also know at the end of the day where that interview or where that, you know, piece of, you know, wisdom they shared with me, where is that going to go ultimately, right? So I would say having that level of metacognition is really, really a skill that I myself am trying very hard to cultivate in my own life.
So, and, you know, and I want to make sure that I understand that, and I want to make sure I understand it, and then we can sort of share that with the listeners today. And I'm going to use a sales example, is that, you know, a lot of times, you know, we might be thinking just of this immediate need or this immediate moment where, you know, I need to make a sale. You know, this is the only appointment I have this week. And if we're focused on that rather than on the big picture, and I think this is what you were talking about, is that, you know, I have a career, I have a business, this is a client that needs my service, I have, you know, I've prepared myself, you know, in order to solve that problem and to be able to be present in a presentation, but know that it is a part of the whole thing, and so that you don't, you know, live or die on that one particular moment. You are just doing a part of your life. Is that sort of what you're describing?
That is a great distillation of what I said. The only thing I would add, Mark, to it is the fact that sometimes there isn't alignment, and it's okay for you to internally say, this is not aligned. Because I, at least personally, would rather know that information than pretend and 6 months down the line regret that I went forward with that. So metacognition is really having the ability to just really know yourself really well and also have a distance with yourself and with the situation at hand. But I think what you reflected back to me was correct.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I got that. So let's translate this. Well, I think it's, I mean, you know, I'm a very thoughtful salesperson. I mean, you know, I share with the people that I coach and the people that I work with is that there are always things that are happening at each and every moment. There's things going through the mind of the client that you are not aware of. I mean, it's going, it's happening while, you know, while you're talking, there are things going on in there that you can't see. And a lot of times when there's, when we're talking, there's things going on in the back of our mind that we're not talking about. Now we may be expressing it. You've already talked about that a little bit, but there's always something going on. And so what I share with people is that you really have to be observant and know where you are in that moment with people all the time. I mean, we don't know, but you want to be paying attention. You know, you want to be looking for clues. You know, an example, you know, a recent person that I interviewed, you know, was talking about body language. And he said, you know, if you're talking about technical information and the person looks down at their watch, that subtle sign is telling you that they're not interested, you know, in the technical information. And this guy had great, you know, great advice. He said, you know, you stop and you say, you know, it looks to me like you're not as interested in the technical information as you are with something else. You know, what would you like me to talk to you about? And he said, you know, in that simple recognition of that body language by paying attention will bond you because there's a connection, because you're paying attention. And not only that, by asking that question and caring, he's going to tell you exactly what you need to do to solve his problem and help him make a decision. You know, I think they're, all of these things seem to be coming together.
Yeah. And just two key points I wanted to make as well. What you state is really this idea of curiosity, right? In the moment, having a curiosity, a genuine curiosity to ask the question, because many people are like, no, I don't want to go there. But if you don't ask the question, then you won't know if there is alignment. And number two, which is very important, that's the stuff that we have to do as people, is to have that emotional regulation with our own selves, right? So whatever that is, prayer, affirmation, meditation, whatever your thing is in the morning or whatever, figure that out for yourself. How are you going to get back to baseline?
Yeah. Do you have any particular ritual or habit that you are doing on a regular basis that sort of brings you back to center?
Yeah. Every day, 20 minutes, I meditate. I make it very simple. I don't do chants. I don't do lotus position. I just sort of lie down, listen to instrumental music. And it started off with like 2 minutes. This is like over 20 years ago. I've been doing it religiously for over 20 years now. And it's really helped me, especially in my recovery. I just had the relapse about a year and a half ago, but that always brings me back. And for me, it's really not about, other people use meditation for other reasons and great. But for me, it's really about observing that self that's meditating and trying to find a connection with that. So people like to drift away and bliss out. Wonderful. I say, that's great. Do whatever works for you. But for me, it's really about being present in that moment. I'm doing nothing but being silent and still in that moment.
So let's talk about when, you know, we're out of control necessarily. You know, maybe the disruptions are taking place. Maybe there is a, you know, a crisis going on in our life and our emotions are out of control. Is there a framework that you have to try and bring that emotional balance back?
I would say the main thing that you need to really do is to really do the basics that people say, right? Drink water, sleep. You know, I do breathing every day, 8 minutes. I use a vagus nerve stimulator on myself, 8 minutes. But mine is sort of on the realm of actual medical recovery because of what I've been through.
Right, right.
But I would say just beyond all the things that TikTok experts and influencers will tell you to do online nowadays is really do an inventory list of attributes that you feel like you need to work on. I'm in a speaking community with, he's a lecturer at Stanford, and he mentions that every day he asks two questions. What did I do well in my communication? And what did I not do well in my communication? And he said he's been doing that for many, 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 many years. And then at the end of the week, he goes and reviews that and sees if there's any connection. And he said it's made him a better communicator. I liken the same example to any area of your life that you want to just take an inventory and figure out for yourself. Because once it's on paper, it's less there's less rumination in the mind, and there's less cognitive load in the mind, which as a speaker, I know for me, I am more akin to doing impromptu speaking than having a speech memorized.
Really?
Yeah.
So does that frighten you at all to do that? Or is it just a natural thing?
You know, I did my TEDx talk about 7 months before my relapse happened. And I'm happy that it sort of, you know, went that way. But the way I did my TEDx talk was sheer memorization. I memorized it to the point where I embodied it in my body. There's a technique that speakers use called memory palace, which is you assign different parts of, like, so for me, it was my home, different parts of your home, different parts of your speech. And so you go visually in your mind and you sort of walk and be like, okay, that's my kitchen. Okay, this is the part of my speech. And when I'm in my kitchen, I recite it. So I did all that. I did all the mental prep. The TEDx went well. At this point, I've gotten over 57,000 views, whatever. But honestly, Mark, to be honest with you, after that experience and after going through my cancer relapse and I did a stem cell transplant, 16 months of recovery, chemo, immunotherapy, I realized something about myself. That is not the speaker that I want to be. I am more akin to knowing where the layout is. And then from that, allowing myself to be like a vessel for that information. And that sounds a little strange, but that's the way for me works. That works really well because I then get to, instead of just giving the information, I get to transmit the information. And to me, that seems more relatable. It lands better. And at the end of the day, I'm more interested in people feeling something than people getting something because AI can give you any information that you want, but AI can't make you really feel the information.
You know, that is, you know, a beautiful expression of why I believe so much in personal development, because at the end of the day, that, you know, there seems to be a lot of people in the world that are trying to become somebody other than who they are. They want to become somebody other than who they are. And you can never compete with somebody else because you're not them. But the flip side is nobody can compete with you because nobody is exactly like you. You know, for those people, and this sort of describes your approach to public speaking, is, you know, the people that have really well developed themselves, all they have to do is manifest who they are. And I think it's sort of as a flower blooming. I mean, you don't have to work at blooming who you are, right? Yeah. So that's a beautiful expression. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, if I could also say, I know back in the day, I was a huge Whitney Houston fan back in the 80s and 90s. I know I'm dating myself here, but, and I remember they used to call her the instrument. And I didn't understand that. Like when I was young, I was like, I don't know what that even means. But now I understand what that is. It's sort of, I liken it to a flute, right? You hold a flute steady and the wind, right? Your mouth creates, you know, the air pressure in order for that flute to play. But the flute really doesn't do much. It just is there. It's steady. And so if I can offer any advice to anyone, I would say, you know your information, especially people who have that cognitive load of expertise and research and data. And those are wonderful. But if you don't allow that to actually filter into people's minds and hearts, then they could have gotten that information in a myriad of different ways. We all carry our phones like it's our own, you know, second organ.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, I'm going to leave you with one last question. And this is really sort of a gift to, you know, the listeners today is think about, you know, the majority of them are in the sales business, which is a tough business. You know, it's tough and lonely. I mean, and, you know, you're out there basically unemployed every single day. And, you know, and unless you make a sale, you're basically unemployed. And so there's a lot that goes on in the mind of a salesperson. So can you share with people, number one, how to get in touch with you and how working with you can create some movement in their business that will benefit them long?
So let me answer the first question second, because I think it's important to give sort of the takeaway. So I would say, obviously, know thyself, right? So know what's sort of happening, right? You talked about self-regulation. This idea that we need to be more sort of responsive rather than reactive is really, really key, like really key to any sales. My sister is in sales as well. Sales is not my forte, to be honest, but I'm getting better at it. I would say have that micro pause. So whether that's a breath or whether that's your own sort of check-in with yourself, I think that's very, very important. I would say ground, know where your feet really are every day and know what it is you want to sort of get accomplished. I know you want to make that sale, but what does that sale actually really mean if you yourself are checked out? of the situation, and just sort of act on that presence. So you can use a Aloha method or not, doesn't really matter. And just sort of allow that monkey mind, that fear loop, to sort of lessen, because you're more in control now of who is actually operating the system, rather than you feeling like you're caught in a machine or in a cog or just in a rotating treadmill. Yeah. Lastly, so they can find me at my website, Savio P. Clemente, SavioPClemente.com. I have a weekly newsletter where I talk about the head, heart, and gut intelligence. I talk about what I experience on a daily basis and also the cool events that I get to cover and research about. They can also find me to do keynotes. I'm actually opening myself up internationally finally to do that, because believe it or not, when you get a stem cell transplant, everything is reset. They actually medically consider it a medical rebirth. They actually give you another birth date. I thought it was like, like, is this a joke? And they're like, no, this is not a joke. You literally have a different birth date. So now I have two birth dates. So two presents per year. I do keynotes. And then also I do executive coaching. I'm a board certified coach. And so they can all find that information on my website.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. I've enjoyed our conversation today, and I really want to thank you for being here.
All right. Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate it.
All right. That was Savio P. Clemente. Here's what I want you to take away from this. Disruption doesn't mean you're broken. It often means your old operating system has expired and it's time to rebuild with discernment, not urgency. The goal isn't to power through with fake toughness. The goal is to get clear, regain trust in yourself, and then build results from a solid foundation. If this episode helped you, do two things. Follow or subscribe to Time Tested Mastery Life Lessons Sell so you don't miss what's next. Share this with one person who's in an in-between season right now. And if you want more trust-based sales mastery and real-world leadership lessons, connect with me at timetestedmastery.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.